Tom Chick.
You are listening to the History Movie Podcast. And this week we will be talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which we have seen. If you have not, we're warning you, we are going to be engaging in very spoiler-specific discussion levels. So if you care, get out of here. I'm joined by Christian Mirtansky. Christian Mirtansky.
X's.
I also have with me Kelly Wand, who I can only imagine what sort of tagline you could come up with for Scott Pilgrim versus the World. What do you have for us, Kelly Wand?
Okay, here's my impression of me watching the trailer for Last Exorcism on TV tonight.
Hmm.
And then here's my impression of me after they say, rated PG-13. Which has nothing to do with Scott Pilgrim.
Last Exorcism is PG-13,
everything to do with
huh?
I know.
Right. All right. Is
it even a sequel?
No. I have no idea what it is. I can't imagine it's any sort of officially sanctioned Exorcist-related project. I don't know.
I need to get that as a sound effect for my phone or something. I need that.
The exasperation of Kelly Wand is something that everyone should have with them daily. It makes life...
It applies to everything. It's just my normal exhale.
So, Kelly Wand, speaking of exasperation, why don't you explain what happens in the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World for people who are still trying to fit it together in their head? Give us a synopsis.
Oh, you mean a Scott Pilgrim-anopsis?
Rock and roll, yes.
Did you say rock and roll?
I've
never heard you say that ever. Wow. You made it sound like that's your catchphrase every week.
I'm testing that.
Rock and roll, dude.
See that.
All right.
After that, I want a synopsis for the exasperation of Kelly Wand, because that's
cool. Will that be PG-13, by the way?
Oh, no.
No, nothing is in my utopia. It's all below G. That's the new rating I just did. All right, here's the stupid synopsis. It's better than the Winter's Bone one, at least. Spoiler alert. Okay, so Scott Pilgrim, the gold statue from year one, is this pasty dude named Michael Cera, who plays bass, I believe is how you say it, in this band called Sex Bob-omb, even though none of them's named Bob or has sex. And he has this devoted hot Chinese girlfriend named Knives Chow, who says she's 17, but she looked pretty 13 and a half to me. That's ridiculous. But he decides to pursue a white chick with lots of emotional baggage and who isn't into him or his music or his game since he's racist. So she tells him she has 7 ex-boyfriends he has to defeat before they can sleep together, even though he has an evil ex-girlfriend that she doesn't have to defeat before they can sleep together.
Mm.
Yeah. So he woos her by stalking her everywhere and serving her garlic bread off his floor. And then it turns out she only went out with gay pirates, douchebag actors, dykes, and twins. Scott Pilgrim, perfectly compatible.
That's a Cher song, I think.
Yeah, I hope that's a 4-time spoiler. So then when the exes die, they explode into coins, which the medical examiner, who's also a coin collector, examines and goes, yep, self-defense. And then after, like, the second fight, Cera starts getting spinal injuries and concussions, so she gets mad at him for complaining about it and goes back to her 7th evil ex, the Rushmore guy, who's famous like all her other exes and his only ex. But it turns out that Rushmore put a secret matrix hole in her skull, so that's why she's with him, and that's the basis of her whole character. So then he comes back from the dead and rewinds time like Superman, who's also one of her exes, but not the right one, in... And Scott Pilgrim learns self-respect from dying, and also that making out with a chick he just met is equivalent to cheating on your girlfriend. And then all the other girls he dumped urge him to follow the bitchy girl of his dreams, just like girls always do in RL. And the world loses, except box office-wise.
Very good, Kelly Wand. That was pretty phenomenal. And now I just want to say for the people listening, I actually saw this with Kelly Wand in person. He doesn't take any notes. He does all of that off the cuff. When we watched the movie, he didn't jot not one tittle down.
Well, it's dark in there.
That's a good point.
Also, I was going to say, you should see this with someone you're into, and then you stand a 75% chance of getting laid. Because I know I did, because I saw it with Tom.
What? What was that?
Did you jot his tittle?
This movie doesn't lend itself to notes, Tom.
It did for me, because I had an assignment to write down... to note the connections it had to video gaming for an article I was doing for Yahoo Games. So anytime something came up, I would sort of jot it down on my little Post-it notepad, which is what I used to take notes in movies, while Kelly Wand would lean over and say, be sure to write that down.
Well, I did it at times where nothing was happening.
You must have said that a lot.
Yeah.
But Dingus, did you just tip your hand?
Yeah, I did.
What does that mean?
Sorry,
okay, Dingus,
so
what does that mean about how you felt about this movie?
Dingus is racist.
Yeah, that's what it means. That means I'm racist.
That's all I can get out of it. Mm. Who's going first?
Dingus, go ahead, elaborate.
Yeah, Dingus sounds like he wants to, doesn't he? Dingus has a lot on his plate. He wants to share.
What shall I say? I really loved that this movie was constantly giving me lines that described how I felt about the movie.
Give us an example.
So I felt good about this. Mm-hmm. The first one was a long story filled with plenty of sighs. That was good. And the other one was, this whole thing is an unmitigated disaster. That was another great thing. I liked that line. That was another of my favorite lines.
Because mitigated another one disasters. Later.
Yeah, you can't have enough of those. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's another one where somebody says, I'm not enjoying this at all, Scott.
The thing is, it sounds like you didn't like the movie.
Yeah, maybe I'll be the odd man out here, but... Oof.
Well, what was wrong with it?
Yeah. Do you hate video games?
I really hate video games. I don't know. I don't have any quarters on me. And I was constantly getting bored. I mean, he would say things like, I'm in love, and all I could think of is, I am bored. I just didn't like any of the characters, except maybe I liked the drummer a little bit. I liked Knives. I liked the name Knives. Knives Chow, until she says, let's chow down, or whatever the stupid joke is. The joke, I'm sorry. Yeah, I should let you guys talk.
Dingus, do you just not like Michael Cera? Is that your problem?
You know, I want to like the guy. I liked him so much in Superbad, but in this, he's just the Youth and Revolt guy, but apparently he has ex-girlfriends for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And chasing his dream girl. Mm-hmm. Same way.
Well, Dingus, is it maybe...
I'll let somebody else
Dingus,
talk.
I just... Well, let's... I'm not done with you. Is it just that you're not a fan of comic book adaptations? Because you may not realize this, and Kelly Wand can probably speak more at length about it, but this is an adaptation of a comic book.
Oh, so that's what the quarters mean, because a comic book costs 25 cents.
Well, actually, I can speak to that at a little bit of length, but shouldn't you guys get to chime in at this point?
Maybe we just want to know what you thought of it.
No one cares what we think. No one tunes in for us. I did the synopsis. It's all you, dude.
Well, you know, I obviously don't know this comic book or graphic novelization or graphic cartoon.
You can just call it a book. There's no need to discriminate.
Yeah.
Just say book.
Why do you hate print and video?
Yeah, okay. I don't know the lyrics to this, or the book, as they say in the music business. What I realized after the fact is that, I kept thinking, well, maybe I don't understand it because I don't know the source material. But what I realized after the fact was that the only reason I was sitting there and giving it a benefit of the doubt and saying, oh, I kind of like that fighter. Oh, I kind of like that little touch there, was because I was thinking, I was constantly giving it the benefit of the doubt because it was from source material that I had no idea about. And I was constantly saying to myself, Christian, give it a break. It's a comic book adaptation, and they're really going for something specific here. And maybe you just don't get it. Just stick with it, and maybe you'll finally get it. And I was constantly giving it the benefit of the doubt, assuming that I just didn't understand what the hell was going on. And I shouldn't need to have to rely on that, but I realized that that's what I was doing throughout the film. I didn't get it at all, and I really couldn't stand it.
Now, Dingus and Kelly Wand, I want you to answer this first. Have you guys seen we all know Edgar Wright, the director of this, from Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Have you guys seen Spaced, his comedy on I guess it's a...
Some of them, and it's funny. And then that was when McGee was going to remake, and everyone went, fuck you, McGee. And then they stopped and made it look like he'd gone, yo.
Dingus, have
you
seen
what?
Any of these?
I think you might have shown me one of them, and it didn't work for me.
I doubt it, seriously. Yeah, because it doesn't work for me either. I don't care for Spaced at all. Yeah.
I like it.
Well, I didn't care for Hot Fuzz because, and I think Hot Fuzz and this suffer from the same thing, and that's a half an hour too long syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the games I would like to play, depending on how you guys felt about this, is how can we cut 20 to 30 minutes out of this film? Because Hot Fuzz had some good ideas going, but it was seriously bloated. And if you're going to make a comedy, and I've made this complaint before, make it lean and mean and stop. This movie is like 153 minutes long. That is too long for this movie.
It's not really over. You just made that up.
It's 112. Yeah.
I have to say, I think being too long is the least of this movie's problems. I think before you can even worry about being too long, I think you need to worry about making an interesting movie with interesting characters that has some kind of motivation to it, where the audience should care about the people in it. This movie came nowhere near that for me. I think this movie being too long, they don't even need to worry about that yet. There's so many other bigger fish to fry with this movie.
Well, you were laughing early on, and I was laughing.
Well, I'm easily amused.
It's some funny lines
There's
in
funny
it.
Funny lines, yeah. And I'm easily amused. But I was like Dingus. I was so bored during this thing. I wanted to give it the benefit of the doubt, and I tried. But this movie is all energy and no heart. And it's the polar opposite of a very similar movie. And rats, I meant to look up the title. What's the thing with Michael Cera?
Paper Hearts.
Paper Cuts? What?
Paper Hearts.
Paper Hearts, yes.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You are absolutely
Paper Hearts
spot on.
Is so laid back and casual, but it's got so much like heart and feeling to it. And it's so much about, there's so many genuine moments in that movie. For all its awkwardness and all of its weird style, there's so much honesty in Paper Hearts that Scott Pilgrim vs. the World couldn't even scratch the surface of. I mean, no matter how it tried. It reminded me a lot of Spaced, of that series. I can see if people like Spaced, which I recall a lot of the humor was in the editing and the way it was cut together in sort of the medium rather than the characters in the supposedly witty dialogue. Like that in Spaced, I could see this movie working for you. But as someone who just completely didn't understand the appeal of Spaced, I felt the same way in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I was sitting there watching it going, I don't know who would like this movie, but by golly, not me.
I liked Space, but I didn't like this movie. But maybe it's the Simon Pegg factor as opposed to Michael Cera.
And I'm not that big of a Simon Pegg fan either. Like, Simon Pegg can be more of a liability than an asset. I like Shaun of the Dead in spite of Simon Pegg. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's just, I think it's Edgar Wright's style just doesn't really work for me. And I suspect that I think his name is Michael Brian O'Malley, the guy who wrote the comic book. I suspect that's not really my kind of thing either. So Dingus, you mentioned, like, I really like Michael Cera, but he just seemed like such an odd fit for me as far as this character. I didn't think he was very well cast. I felt like he was cast because of his potential box office draw and not because he expresses what it seemed like they were going for with that character.
I don't really know what they're going for with that character, and you're right. He seems like he's been sort of grafted onto every scene he's in. And either the girls, he has the best chance when he's in scenes with knives, I think.
And I credit her with that, by the way. I thought she was great.
Mm-hmm. I did, too. I thought she
was
great and fresh. And part of it is, and Kelly can go ahead and call me a racist, is that she immediately reminded me of his girlfriend in Paper Hearts. You know, they have a couple of exchanges where, and then they're walking away in the snow together, and I just thought of that film. And she was constantly sort of making him a little more honest, but I never got any sense of any chemistry or reality when he was with Ramona at all.
Same here. That's another bit of his terrible casting, I thought.
And you're right about no heart, because they would kiss and the filmmaker would just show us little pink hearts flying out of their mouth instead of actually showing us real emotion or heart.
Or the kiss.
And if you want to play all these comic book games and do little scribbles here and there and waste all our time with that, then fine. But you can't do that substituting for actual emotion.
And I do play, like, do you guys, what did you, so Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think is her name, and the only thing I really remembered her from, and she made just as much of an impression on me in this, was John McClane's grown-up daughter in The Last Die Hard.
Oh, she's in a lot of good stuff.
Like what?
She's in Death Proof. She's in The Final Destination 3, minus the that I added for you.
What's her death
scene? She's in Sky High, that comic book high school movie. She's like the... I'm a big
fan
of her.
A lot of good stuff. Like,
she's in a lot of good stuff, yeah. This is the first movie where I didn't like her look.
Kelly Wan, what is her death scene in Final Destination 3? How did she get killed?
A train hits her, and then she goes, oh, that was close, and then the train hits her again. Because she's the one having the premonitions, and then she goes, oh, it's this camera. They introduce a camera all of a sudden. Because every movie, the psychic powers vary, and that's how they spice it up.
Was she the lead? Was she like the one who gets the premonition and freaks out and stops? Is that the roller coaster one?
Yeah, it's a roller coaster.
She's the lead
one.
In the roller coaster Final Destination.
And you don't remember her?
No.
She's pretty hot in that. She's a hot chick. I didn't like her look in this. I didn't like her hair changing. I liked the one ass shot. But
yeah,
the sister... and then Ellen Wall.
Well, the sister, by the way, so Dingus, you recognized her, I'm sure. I mean, that my heart sort of leapt, like, oh, good, we're going to do cool stuff with Anna Kendrick, and they didn't. I love her.
What the hell was she doing? What was Anna Kendrick doing in this movie?
They
paycheck.
I think I like the movie more than you guys, even though I don't recommend it, because the first half seemed kind of fun in a way, and it was kind of killing the audience. So that always kind of like, okay, well, if the audience is laughing, maybe it's funny and I'm just dumb. But then the fights took over and it got really quiet.
Now, when you talk about the audience, Kelly Wan, are you talking about the audience or about just me? Because I laugh, like I said, I laugh at anything.
I laughed for the first half, and you laughed for the first half, and then Monkey came on screen, and we went,
Monkey?
And then the twins fight, the most boring fight where the twins.
Oh. Where the special effects take over.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we got this. Okay, you guys just sit tight.
It just keeps happening over and over, and nothing's happening character-wise. And they introduce all these awesome characters, the most awesome of whom was Knives, and then we get to see him ditch Knives slowly, languidly, for all these dumbass fights that are all the same. None of those fights were that different.
There was no real reason for him to win any of them.
No.
Other than the Roxy fight, maybe, where he had some inside information.
Well, he went some through guile and some through bile. Listen,
does it make any sense?
I don't know.
And some while floating down the Nile.
The fights were obviously, I mean, one of the ideas, too, obviously, is that this ties into video game culture. And I disagree. And that I think it ties into video game culture if you have not been a part of video game culture for the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
This is a guy who thinks of video games as Mortal Kombat and JRPGs. And it had this weird tension, too, between being this sort of nostalgia about, you know, collecting coins and the fight sequences from Mortal Kombat and then contemporary stuff with, like, texting and cell phones. There were phone booths in this, for instance. He used AOL to check his email.
You've got mail.
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't understand, like, when was this supposed to take place? Was this about contemporary youth, in which case I think it was woefully out of touch, or was it a nostalgia thing that an older guy was from his perspective? And I think the movie was a little confused there. So as far as being about video game culture, you know, the fact that you play the Zelda theme, but that's not particularly, I mean, there's so much more to video game culture these days than just having a character wear a Nintendo shirt and showing a little NES on the shelf in the background.
Not playing those old games either, too. Like, he's playing that arcade game, like the Dance Mat thing. Like, that's a modern thing. Like, that's not an 8-bit game.
Right.
And it's also got snow in it. What is this, 1840?
What?
I don't know. I agree with Dingus's child. What was Dingus going to say?
I was going to say, my audience's biggest laugh was at the pixelated Universal logo at the beginning. Seriously, the whole audience, and really it was just a titter. The whole audience tittered. And that was about the extent of it. I mean, they laughed here and there, but the biggest laugh, and I thought, wow, this audience is going to be with this film. You know, there's that whole extended opening Universal logo pixelated sequence that the audience thought was quite amusing. And then that pretty much did it.
Right.
Hmm.
Dingus, is this better or worse than Rushmore?
What's Rushmore? I don't know what that is. Rushmore. You mean the monument?
It seemed to go
it's
for
not
this,
better than the monument.
It did seem to go for it's this not. Kind of Rushmore, like, you know, stylized the world from his perspective kind of thing. But I didn't understand the stakes either. Like, every now and then he would talk about, oh, I'm going to die. You know, I'm going to get killed if I flexes. And I.
But the vegan police will show up. That's good. Twist.
I mean, there was no, yeah, there was, I actually like that simply because I love that Thomas Jane and Cliff Collins Jr. had a cameo.
Yeah.
I love those guys.
I like Thomas Jane too, but just go ahead and make him play Todd and have us rid of Brendan Routh.
Really? You didn't like him?
No, I don't need him.
He's funny.
Thomas Jane was funny, and I don't need that was the, if when I'm thinking of and I disagree with you, Tom. I think that one of the film's main major problems, and you're probably right that it has a lot of other things to address, but I think it's so bloated, and it has so many moments where you're just lull. We are in such a lull here, where characters are saying once again. Some sort of ridiculous emotional pap that the film hasn't earned to each other, that it has at least 20 to 30 minutes it could have cut out. And I think any of that vegan stuff, while amusing at best, could have been cut out, as much as I like Thomas Jane. And if we must save Thomas Jane, then have him play Todd.
Well, but see, Dingus, it seems like it has to, I think because it's based on a series of comics and not just one book or episode or whatever whatever you call them.
Nerd alert.
Because it's got, I think it's trying to fit, if I'm not mistaken, in the book, these fights are drawn out over several issues, and it's trying to cram all of them in there. And mm-hmm. if it wants to be about those seven fights, if that wants to be, it's actually only six because one of them is twins, if that wants to be the template for the movie, I guess you're right. I guess I'm agreeing with you, Dingus. If that wants to be the template for the movie, it needs to focus on that, and that will include all the vegetarian stuff. But I just thought I didn't feel that. Also focusing on these characters and trying to make us care about them, and you're talking about the emotional path it didn't earn. If it had instead focused on that, it just felt like it was trying to go both ways, and neither way worked. So I guess I kind of agree with you, Dingus, in that it's not so much that it needs to trim the fat as it needs to decide which one it's going for, because they didn't seem to fit together that well at all to me. Because once it took over to the fights and it was some stuntman or whatever, it was, you know, Michael Cera's face CG'd on something, I just lost all interest in that. None of that mattered to me. Just like none of the stuff mattered to me about his connection with Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
It's hard to care about Michael Cera trying to get laid anymore. Because it's happened like 16 movies in a row. Like, okay, he's not a virgin now. Like, we've seen this. We've seen this rite of passage.
And but his character barely seems interested in getting laid himself. I mean, I don't get the sense that he really wanted to get laid.
I don't know. Come on, you don't go out with Ellen Wong just to hold hands. He's just,
well,
but he's 23.
Yes, you do, apparently.
I keep forgetting he's 23 in the movie.
I think he's 22, going on 23 or something.
No one's a virgin at 22.
He's not a virgin.
Even
I don't think it's about getting laid. I mean, I think it wants to be about, you know, Superbad is about getting laid, and it's great about that. But I think this is supposedly this teenage angst about true love, which is about the most tedious thing you can have in a movie next to junkies, you know, heroin junkies trying to score a kick or whatever they're doing. It's just tedious to me when it's not.
That's what love is, too, Tom.
Love is heroin? Okay, very good.
Well, especially, and that's a really good point, Tom, especially when it's a 22 or 23-year-old who is suffering through that teenage angst.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he's had all these ex-girlfriends that he's apparently dumped. As the drummer says, you're this lady killer wannabe jerky jerk. Well, which is it? Is he a guy who can't get laid, or is he a guy who's a lady killer? Which is it?
That's not a real line from the movie.
I think he's a lady killer. That he just acts...
Say that again, Dingus. Like, is that a real line from the movie that you just said?
Yeah,
jerky
something
jerk.
Kim says. We all know you're a lady killer, wannabe jerky jerk.
Wow.
So one of her...
So the band's called The Bomb, and she calls him a jerky jerk. So the whole thing's Clockwork Orange.
It's just stuttering.
He's a droog.
Dingus, so you didn't recognize... her name is Allison Pill, the actress who played Kim, the drummer, did you?
No, I had to look her up, but... It said she was in Treatment, and I don't recognize her from that show.
She was the Mia Wasikowska replacement in season 2. So In treatment is this HBO series that Dingus and I love, where Gabriel Byrne plays a psychotherapist, or just a therapist, whatever. And he's in the first season, an actress named Mia Wasikowska, who played Alice in Wonderland, there's just this phenomenal interplay between the two of them. So when they do season two with a new cast of patients, they replace her, as it were. You know, they want a similar sort of thread with Gabriel Byrne and this young woman who's like his daughter's age, with Allison Pill. And her deal in season two is that she's got cancer, is that she's diagnosed with terminally ill with cancer. And she tried so hard. I mean, it was so tough to follow up Mia Wasikowska. And she was mostly good, but seemed to be trying a little too hard, a little out of her depth, I thought. But it was good to see her. I enjoyed her in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, simply because I recognized her from that.
She'll be great in the Short Circuit reboot.
Oh, that's mean, Kelly Wand. Explain what you're saying, because I got that.
Oh.
She's like a butcher, Ali
Sheedy. Oh, that's, wow, that's really mean.
She doesn't listen to this, does she? I'd still do her.
I liked her. I thought she was really cute, and I really cheered for her when Jason Schwartzman said the, I don't know what he said, but you're smoking hot drummer.
Right.
Whatever. I was very happy for her in sort of a, somebody thinks my little sister's cute. I mean, I liked her. I liked it when the very first time she says, where's Sex Bomb? And just bam, bam, and just banged her sticks together. And
I mean, yeah, there was a lot of energy in the movie. That I, you know, I guess it deserves some credit for that. And
yeah, you know, you said that. You said this movie is all energy. And even at the beginning of that ridiculous fight against the twins, when Scott Pilgrim's, when Sex Bomb would start to play, I'd be like, oh, I can groove on a little bit of this. But I never saw any reason for them to be better than the other band or what the hell was going on with the CG. I just liked some of the rock and roll, and you know, some of it I could have done without, like, you know, Crash and the Boys or whatever the hell that was.
Who's Crash and the Boys?
Racist.
That was the other band, Crash and the Boys?
That was the first band they went up against, and it was also a throwaway joke
early on.
Where he says, we're going up against Crash and the Boys, and then somebody goes, you know, that's Crash and those boys. You know, this film is constantly sort of flopping jokes onto the floor like that.
And I imagine they're straight from the book.
Tom calls it a book.
So, speaking of In Treatment, Tom, did you recognize anybody else from In Treatment in this movie?
So I'm assuming his daughter, maybe? Was she one of the characters?
Yeah.
I have no idea who, though.
His daughter was Roxy.
Ah.
Oh, really? All blonde and everything? All right.
Do you know who Roxy was?
The blonde who comes back to town, his ex.
The one who doesn't do anything.
No? Oh, who's Roxy, then?
Oh.
Roxy is bi-furious.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes, I can totally see that. Yes, I can. Yep. Now that you mention that, I can totally see her. Very good, Dingus. Very good. Mm. Yeah, because they're not evil ex-boyfriends, evil exes.
Right. Yeah. Took him forever to figure that one out. Gets it. Ding.
Bi-furious. Did you get that too, Dingus? Do you need me to explain that to you?
I don't really understand what that means, but you could probably tell me.
And she was so energetic. I mean, bless her heart. Yeah.
The opposite of energetic, but whose line readings I liked, even though they had nothing to do with the movie, was Kieran Culkin did.
Yeah, he was funny.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
No, I like him.
Homophobe.
No, I like him. I mean, I can't keep the Culkin kids straight, but some of them are very good, and I wish they would get better material.
Apparently they can't either.
He had a lot of fun. Every time he came on, he had a good line, I thought.
Well, no, I know, but that's the thing, is I liked him. He's a... You know, he's a good actor, and I just didn't...
He knew what was going on.
I didn't like him
the
playing the typical, you know, sarcastic gay man. I mean, that stuff just...
No, he was doing a Michael Cera gay man, because he was deadpan.
Whatever. Oh, look, they're all in bed together. Woo-hoo-hoo. Michael Cera.
Yeah, it was very much sort of a comic book version of what your gay roommate would be,
yeah,
with four guys in bed, and I need you out. It's a sex thing.
Yeah.
I loved his line readings, though. I loved it when he was on the movie set, and he said... Scott, Evil X, fight. But he's there because he's totally into Captain America. Who's the dude?
Chris Evans, yeah.
Oh, you mean the Human Torch?
No, you mean one of the losers. Now I have a loser. Bitch.
He's totally into Skateboard Looser, but he doesn't seem to care at all about the fact that he's totally there to see that guy and get in his pants. He's just, Scott, Evil X, fight.
He does later, but then he doesn't mind that he dies.
Yeah.
And no one else does either. There's a whole movie set, and they all just go, interesting, our lead just died. Thanks, Scott Pilgrim. Later.
Okay.
No one tries to talk him out of the jump. Never mind.
Yeah.
It's great. Great movie. Yes, Tom?
What's better, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World movie or game? Kelly Wand, go.
The game's the best thing I've played this year, but I haven't seen it yet.
Dingus has played it. Dingus, haven't you played it?
Dingus played me.
I tried to play that.
Knives is okay.
In the first club where, like, all those vampire girls are flying
demon
around.
Chicks, that's right.
And I didn't get it, and then I watched the movie, and I went, oh, that's from the
and
video
it
game.
That's right.
And all I could think was, this musical number is so embarrassing, but I wish I was playing the video game right now, because that was sort of interesting.
But now, they tried to go, oh, it's supposed to be embarrassing, because then there's, like, reaction shots. I'm like, what is going on? What did this movie just turn into?
Well, that was my favorite part of the movie, just because, again, this is the luxury you enjoy when you don't watch trailers. When they're up there playing and suddenly some Indian fellow bursts in flying, crashes into the roof and challenges him to a fight, I had no idea what was going on. That my whole reaction was like, what? That's just so completely random. And that's the premise of the movie, of course, that he fights the seven evil exes, and it's in all of the trailers. But when that first happened, I was just so taken aback. And I was like, okay, well, this is a weird direction. Let's see what happens.
Let's hope it doesn't happen six more times, though. Tom thought.
Well, just the surprise of that was my favorite part of the movie, and I wouldn't have gotten that if I'd seen the trailers.
Was it still surprising an hour later when it was still happening? And Scott Pilgrim was going, oh, another roof just exploded.
I guess what's surprising is I could see this maybe working in a comic book where each evil ex isn't, like, choreographed the same way, and they do some kind of either different artwork or different dialogue. I don't know. I could just see them mixing it up a little bit more. But the battles against the evil exes here were just, okay, now let's do a big overproduced, elaborate fight scene between a bunch of, I assume they were CG characters. I don't know how they did some of that stuff. It looked serviceable enough, but there was no sense of stakes, and I didn't care that much about
the movie. Yeah.
So I could see that maybe working in the book, but as far as in the movie,
you need rules, though, even in the comic book. I'll bet there's more rules in the source material than there was in this, because none of the fights felt like, I mean...
You do need rules, especially if you're going to riff on the very end about when you fail at a video game, you just retry. And I'm not sure how clear that was to people who didn't get the video game connection. Like, that seemed a little odd, just that you can jump into a do-over. I guess that the whole gimmick would continue. Yes.
You can't do a do-over. Once you're dead in the game, you can't go, oh, just rewind the time.
Well, he earned an extra life, and he even had the line. I'm getting a life.
I didn't even think of that, simply because did he get more than one one-up? Didn't he get a...
But he,
I thought those were just throwaway jokes rather than rules things, but I think Dingus might have a point.
Well, yeah, he does.
The one-up get-a-life thing was that ace in the hole that I realized, oh, that's going to come back.
Right.
Golf reference. Good, Dingus.
Cool.
And a tennis reference, I think. So, yeah, what? What was I saying?
All right, I want to ask you guys something. Will Jason Schwartzman ever have non-embarrassing material again? Have we lost him?
As of what? This or before this? How far back are you going
to
go?
I mean, what's the last non-terrible thing he did? I just hate to see him squandered so frequently. I just can't. Dingus, you're the Jason Schwartzman expert here.
Shop Girl?
That's a good point. Since then, anything?
I'm a Huckabee's apologist. You heard me.
Wow.
You know, unfortunately, I think
for
me, he's just so much Rushmore, and that's one of my favorite films, that it's really hard, if that's your first film out of the gate, to to work beyond that. But you know, I think he's talented enough to do so, but unfortunately he's just taking nod and wink roles.
Yeah.
He does a funny piano song at the end of Slackers.
Okay. Well.
With Devon Sawa, Tom's favorite Final Destination star, after Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
So, something I would like to know, you know, I am sort of interested in finding out how people who understand the source material feel about this, because it just seemed there were so many little pop cultural reference moments in this movie. I mean, just watching the credits, the list of those went the entire screen long of pop culture, or, you know, thank yous or whatever they have to put. It just the Seinfeld one alone made me think, why are you doing this? And I wonder if is the book like that as well? Does the book include all these little pop culture references that you have to wade through? And it, you know, you talking about this being these different fights makes me think, well, maybe it would work as sort of a BBC style series where it's just a 6 or 7 episode series and you're done.
Yeah. With someone other than Michael Cera.
Well, I would have to say, yeah, where you can explore it. I don't know who else you would have, but where you can explore the different fights and use different art styles and use different fight styles for each different fight instead of just having it be the same old versus thing over and over and over again and just sort of lapse into a generic, you know, flying through the air punch thing. And then he wins for no discernible reason. It just seems arbitrary because he's our hero.
The thing about the Seinfeld thing, too, is it's the same thing that sucks about all those scary movies, is if you just present something, it's not inherently funny. Like, you have to riff on it, like Airplane kind of does.
That's a fair point. I mean, you should have some sort of perspective or commentary to go with it, maybe.
If you just hear the Seinfeld music, I don't see why that's funny.
Right,
Like, oh, that's from Seinfeld.
That's true, and that speaks to Tom's point at the beginning about video games. Who's this supposed to be for? Is this supposed to
apparently
be for people
no
who know video games
on.
Right now, or people who knew video games when Seinfeld was popular 10, 15 years ago?
Well, Tom and I are old men who played video games back in the day, and we weren't impressed. So if it's not for us, who is this?
Exactly.
But you're still playing them.
Don't tell anyone. Video games.
Tom cheats too.
Dingus, were there any cameos that you were waiting for that never came through?
Wow. Yeah, Dingus, I was about to ask you that. What's the answer?
I was really hoping for Sid Meier to show up.
Really, there were no cameos. There was nothing. You were like, well, when is this going to happen? And it didn't happen.
Or Inspector.
William Shatner. I don't know what you're going for, Tom.
Really?
Lesbians?
Who's Tom thinking of? Walter Matthau?
Are you serious, Dingus?
I'm serious. I don't know what you're talking
about.
Oh, my God.
How embarrassing.
I know. It's really embarrassing, Kelly Wand, because you and I planned for that. It was your idea, Kelly Wand.
Oh, wait. Remind me of my idea?
that we make him think there's a Mel Gibson cameo in the...
No, just do it. Start all over. You fucked it up.
What did I do? Did I do it wrong?
Oh, I totally forgot that you did that.
Are you serious?
Finding the feet, Mr. Inception. You didn't go deep enough, I guess.
Yeah.
I totally did an Inception on Dingus to make him think that there was a Mel Gibson cameo. So
that's your way of... Okay.
I know Leonardo DiCaprio.
You're the worst collaborator I've ever had.
I tried. Dingus, admit it. I did a good job. I didn't giggle when I said something to you about a Mel Gibson cameo, did I?
No, you really did a good job, but it didn't take.
Oh, each sake.
Wait, did you do it right? Because the thing was, it's Mel Gibson appearing as the Apex or someone's dad, and then the crowd booed.
Well, I told them that people booed, and I said something about, well, you've heard about the Mel Gibson cameo, right? And Dingo's like, what? I was like, oh, so I didn't want to spoil anything, but I thought maybe you'd read about that. Just suffice to say, our audience booed. And Dingo's like, oh, okay. He went and forgot about it.
You know what? My first instinct was Steven Seagal, and I think Dingus would have bought into that. So I apologize.
Dingus has got like a Teflon brain. You tell him something and it goes off.
Gibson, they wouldn't have left Gibson.
So now,
that's too much.
Here's the other thing. So Kelly Wand and I are playing StarCraft the other day, and he types in, it's before our Winter's Bone podcast, before he went to see it. He types in, while we're just playing StarCraft, in the chat window at some point, he says something about there's a line in Winter's Bone, that's no bone. And just because it's typing it, I couldn't hear any inflection or anything, so I really thought that there was a line in Winter's Bone where somebody was going to say, that's no bone. Now, so I'm watching the movie Winter's Bone, and in the back of my head, I'm like, well, I know at some point someone's going to hold up a bone or a stick, and someone else is going to say, that's no bone. And it never happened, and I only after the movie realized Kelly Wan was riffing on the whole that's no moon
right.
Star Wars.
That was Sunday night. You had to have seen it by then.
No, I hadn't seen it yet. It was before we went and saw it. We were playing Star... So that's how susceptible I am to Inception versus Dingus, who...
That's how stupid you are with Star Wars humor.
Well, that as well, yeah. Good Lord.
That's no bone. That sounds possible.
No, that's a short-range injury.
Yeah. All right, so my audience, this isn't my audience, but Kelly Wand and I saw it at Man's Chinese Theater. And as I'm walking back to... So as I'm leaving the theater, Kelly Wan and I said goodbye at this point. We refused to talk to each other about the movie because we save it for this podcast. As I'm walking away, along Hollywood Boulevard there, there's a woman who's been handed one of these flyers because, you know, Hollywood Boulevard is full of people handing out flyers and whatnot for tourists. And a woman studying a flyer, she looks at him, she goes, oh, I don't want this. I can have this shit back in Clearwater. I don't know if she saw Scott Pilgrim vs. the World with us, but that's what I heard right after seeing the movie.
What's this got to do with Credence?
Very good, very good.
Horrible. That's
pretty
good.
Do you recognize Julie?
I don't know who Julie is. Who's Julie?
Julie was the random friend who worked at the record store.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yes, I did. Don't tell me. Dadgummit, Dingus. Ugh.
They kept blocking at her mouth.
No, I know who she is, and I looked up who she was, and I was like, oh, that's what she's from. I need to remember this to tell Dingus. I've since forgotten. Rats, who was she?
It has something to do with Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, yes, of course, Daisy in Funny People.
Very good, yeah.
Love interest. But I didn't know that until I looked it up. Did you know that, or did you look it up?
Oh, I had to look it up. She reminds me of a friend of mine. And I kept thinking, is that? No, it can't be her.
Right.
No, she would tell me if she was in a movie this big.
but yes, I quite like Julie. You know what? It was a good cast. That's the thing. You guys, I don't know why you're so down on Brandon Routh. I think he's really funny. I thought he was funny here. I think he's hilarious in Zack and Mary Made a Porno.
I agree.
I like the cast. And Chris Evans, for Pete's sake, I just, even though it didn't really work here, like, he's a funny guy. I like seeing him work. And, you know, good cast. Just shame about the movie.
Too many of them. There were too many cooks, too many actor cooks.
Yeah.
It doesn't work because I think that when is it Scott Evans?
Chris Evans.
When he's doing the things he's doing, which is a little bit heightened. You seem a little bit heightened. And I really liked, he doesn't get enough support for that. There aren't enough comic book characters doing that same thing that support the type of things that Envy and Todd and this dude Chris Evans are doing. And I think there should have been more of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Roxy was trying, but she wasn't quite getting there.
Yeah.
As much as I liked her, there just wasn't enough of that. And so when he's doing all that gruff stuff with his voice and all that stuff, it just didn't really work for me because there wasn't enough support for him.
Yep. Dingus, give us...
And part of that might be the fact that Michael Cera, he kind of is a black hole in ways. He sort of sucks the energy out of a lot of the things that are going on in this movie. And again, I like the guy, but I feel like he sort of sucks the energy out of a lot of things that are going on.
Yep. Give us a line in that Chris Evans voice, because you have that down, Dingus. Let's hear something.
Oh, I don't have any lines out of that.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that was good, Dingus. Well done.
Good work, Dingus. Get out of your voice.
I did like Ivy versus Astaroth, though. How's that?
The chain sword, very good. Yeah. Look at you, Dingus. What? Like a video game nerd. Why don't you explain to Kelly Wan, because you just flummoxed him.
Oh, it's from that game.
It's that one game
with the,
that I love to play.
And the Asian types.
All right. So,
do you guys have any favorite really stupid lines that you know that the filmmakers thought were really funny?
Before we do those, I want to say there's one line where I think she says something to him, you're just another evil ex waiting to happen. that I thought came very close to being poignant, and it would have worked in a different movie. And it reminded me of Noah Baumbach's first movie, Mr. Jealousy, which is about
Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz dealing with his own jealousy about his girlfriend's exes. And I didn't care for that movie. It didn't really work. But there's a great moment where he has the realization that his jealousy drives her away, and he says, "I have become what I hated most, one of her ex-boyfriends." Which in that movie is this great moment of self-realization, and here I don't know what it was. So that was one line where I was like, "Oh, this could have worked if the movie had been better." So okay. So you guys, what's a dopey funny line that you thought they were really proud of?
Bread makes you fat.
No, I like that. That worked for me.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
One of those scenes I could have just cut out of the film.
No, it was their date. They needed that scene.
And it was pointless.
Wait, are you talking about the bread
scene? It's their only date.
About the bread scene?
Yeah, I could have gotten
that. That was funny. Mm. Bread makes you fat is funny.
It was the scene without fighting. That's what it is.
All right, Dickens, what's a funny line that you thought they were really proud of that, go, give us one.
I'm in lesbians with you.
Did you like the, it's time to use the L word, no, the other L word? Did that work for you?
Well, that was a great setup for my line.
Okay. What about, I have to go pee on her?
I was about to say that. And only in RL, like not from the movie.
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees and I'm caught in between. Counting 1, 2, 3, Peter Pan, that's free, getting down with 3 feet, everybody loves
old. All right, let's do 3x3. How about that? What? Don't worry about 3x3, Kelly Wand. Why do you hate 3x3?
Yeah, but did we do an F on Scott Pilgrim? Like, will the listeners be satisfied with us going, man, that Gibson prank?
And then some, Kelly Wand.
All right, good point. You showed me. I wanted to see the Expendables, just FYI.
You know what, that's true. Why did we see that?
Because you go, we've seen too many supergroup macho movies this year with A-Team and
Oh, Lakers, certainly got so. Our team, our fill of dinner.
Plus, I have a free screening in 2 days.
Comedies, so... All right, so let's do it.
That was one of the first things my audience said after this show was over. After Scott Pilgrim, one guy in the back goes, "But Expendables took the night."
What? Really? People announce box office as heckling?
Apparently. In LA, Kelly Wand. Only in LA.
No, that's weak.
Dingus, why don't you introduce our 3x3 this week? What do you got for us?
I'm upset about this.
The movie or the 3x3?
The podcast.
You're always upset about the podcast.
That's true. We're terrible. At least it's free. I'll give us that.
What?
Nothing.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I mean, for me.
All right, this week's 3x3 are your top three protagonist ass-kickings, meaning that the protagonist, hero, good guy of the movie gets beat down.
Good. Okay, now I go first because I'm introducing this week's 3x3. My number, this is good, and I had to struggle a little bit with what ass-kicking means. I'm confident, though, I'm happy with my choices, and there's a lot of good stuff here. My number three is Played for Laughs, but it's such a great stylized ass-kicking that fits so perfectly in with the tone of the movie. And I'll just give you the line, and a big part of this ass-kicking is the line that follows after the protagonist gets his ass kicked. And that line is, "And stay out of the Woolworths." Anyone?
I'm going to say, "Oh, brother, where are you?"
You're going to be absolutely right. And it's George Clooney and, you know what? I used to know the actor's name. I can't remember. I like this guy. I've seen him in a few things.
That's the best scene in that movie.
I love that whole
movie. Dash Mihawk.
What's his name?
Dash Mihawk.
Oh, you're such a liar. And they're doing old-timey Depression-era fighting, you know, with their fists curled all up and, you know, walking around. I mean, it's like a goofy old-timey boxing movie. And George Clooney just takes one pow right on the kisser and gets beat up by Vernon T. Waldrop. I think that's the suitor's name. Because it's the story of Ulysses, by the way. And Ulysses comes back and finds there are suitors after his wife. So George Clooney finally comes back. Holly Hunter's his wife, and he finds a suitor, and he challenges him to a fight, gets smacked in the nose, thrown out of the Woolworths. So that's my number three protagonist ass kicking.
That's a good one. I love that. I didn't even think about that.
All right.
Well, and it goes against expectations because Clooney's the leading man. You go, and the other guy's so goofy.
And we'll talk more about this, but I think that is one of the hallmarks of a great protagonist ass kicking when it does go against expectation.
When it's Clooney.
And when it's Clooney. I mean, who among us hasn't wanted to see that guy get whacked in the nose? But
he's good at it. He takes a good punch. Because he looks like he's kind of trying, too. So it's a great scene, great fight.
And I think,
but I also love the mental image now of the way they hold their hand, fists, that sort of fisticuffs, sort of those old pictures of old boxers. It's very awkward and praying mantis.
Praying mantis is very well put. That's probably even what it's called. All right, so Kelly Kwan, you are second. What is your number two protagonist?
What?
Oh, your number one, or your number three.
What?
I'll get the number eventually. What is your number?
I see. This is why we're free. I mean, okay, I'm going to do a quote for my number three beatdown of hero movie. Looking for me? That's how I act.
What? I don't know. Dingus, do you got that one?
It was in the trailer that you guys didn't see. I mean, that line.
It sounds like you're doing Andre the Giant.
Role models are important. Maybe you guys don't like this movie, because it's not that great. Probably get in trouble for saying that. It's a scene in RoboCop. They totally annihilate the hero. before I saw that movie, because I wasn't very excited about RoboCop, and I hadn't seen the trailers, and I was going to be about some douchebag who becomes a cyborg. But I didn't realize he just totally gets his... just blown apart really slowly and tortuously. That was pretty good.
Well, Kelly Wand, you've taken a very dark turn here. That seems to transcend ass-kicking, but you know what? Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't stay ass-kicked. I wasn't sure if that was the prerequisite.
I mean, but that's like...
back and...
Again, you're cool. You know, whatever you want to do with your list is fine, but good Lord, that's not an ass-kicking. They, like, use a shotgun to blow his legs off and his arms off and...
And his ass. Also, I like ass kickings where it's always the guy's first day on the job. Yeah, all right. Add up nice and early. Haven't even gotten paid yet. And then you get your hand blown off like an hour into it. Because your dumbass partner looked at a guy's dick. And that's why you got your hand blown off.
Oh, that's right. I forget. Explain that, Kelly Wand. Wow, I can't believe that makes me like RoboCop a little less. Why don't you explain what you just...
Well, Nancy Allen's the partner.
Right.
And it's the first movie where she's kind of not hot. She's a little chunky in it, as opposed to Dressed to Kill, Nancy Allen. And she comes up behind the black dude, racial stereotype, and then she tells him to put his hands up, and then he turns around and he's still peeing, or his penis is out. And then she looks down, and then that gives him the drop on her. And then Murphy does no backup. He tries to take on 30 dudes, which is kind of dumb, too.
Right.
And then, you know, it's just bad police work in general.
Kelly, on a quick tangent here. How do you feel about the fact that it looks like Darren Aronofsky will not be doing a remake of RoboCop?
I'm ambivalent because Aronofsky doesn't make anything bad ever. So to see him wrestle with something as retarded as RoboCop would have been entertaining.
Yeah.
But you're the one who wants to see Don't Let Me In, and I don't even want to hear that title.
I will say,
as a joke.
Well, Matt Reeves is no Darren Aronofsky.
Have you seen his quotes about what he's doing?
I know. We'll have a...
And fuck these remakes. I'm sick of it. I don't like these comic movies. I don't like the remakes. No more. None. Stop making American remakes of other European movies. Dinner for Schmucks was the last one I'm seeing.
We're closing the door on them? All right.
Yeah.
Hollywood, you've heard it here. Kelly Wand says no more. Good.
And Hollywood cares what I think. I think they've proven that time and again.
Put your foot down, Kelly. Dang it.
So which would be a better film? Don't Let Me In or Let Me In? Which would make that a better film?
Don't not let me in. Don't let the right one in yet.
Too many words.
Yeah.
Okay, Dingus.
That's what was...
What is your number three protagonist ass-kicking?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to chip in that I think Kelly really nailed it. He got an ass annihilation. I didn't even think about RoboCop, and he gets totally destroyed.
And see, they don't even, I don't even think they're shooting him. That's not an ass kicking. You've just, your protagonist, Kelly Wand, was just shot. Getting shot?
Oh, so it has to involve the actual ass and a kick? Is that
no, getting punched in the nose is getting your ass.
Oh, okay. So a bullet to the face isn't an ass.
It is not. No, I don't think.
Tell that to Jack in Chinatown. Wait, that was a knife. Never mind. I just ruined Tom's number one, I predict.
Nice work. My number three is so much more wimpier now after hearing about RoboCop getting his ass shot off.
Well, I think they're all going to be. I can't imagine anything short of Hostile. I don't think it's gonna live up to that. Yeah.
Tom's saying I Terminator 2 lava'd the topic just now.
Nobody would ever do that. That would be ridiculous.
They'd really tear you a new one on the forums. Get that lava.
How does he spell break?
yeah. I'll go to my grave hating that, thinking about it. Dear me, McGee, you beat me again, you three-word letter. All right. I'm done mumbling like Popeye.
All right, so Dingus, what is your number three protagonist ass-kicking?
All right, my number three protagonist ass-kicking starts with this quote. You haven't got the stomach for it.
That could be anything.
Yeah.
I think this is the hardest quotes, because he's playing to your zone, so I have no chance. And then you'll usually go, oh, really, dude?
I don't know this one.
All right, I'll give you the lines that lead up to it, and that'll let you guys know, okay?
Okay.
Get off the grift, Roy. Why? You haven't got the stomach for it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Kingpin.
It's that thing with John Cusack, the grifters.
Very good. Mm. The Grifters, and this is why I said it was going to be far wimpier than RoboCop. It's a very simple beatdown, and it barely takes any time. And John Cusack is playing Roy Dillon, who's this sort of small-time grifter, and the small-time grift he's doing early on, and this sort of stretches the idea of I shouldn't have used the word protagonist, but he's the male lead, he's sort of the protagonist.
No, he totally is. You don't think that works? I mean, is that a Jim Thompson novel, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a Jim Thompson protagonist. That's classic Jim Thompson, I think.
Noir is protagonist.
But you can sort of argue. He has this small time grift where he shows a bartender a 20 and says, "Give me a beer," and then he palms the 20 and puts a 10 out. And the bartender gives him change for the 20. He does this at a Bennigan's first, and then a scene later, he does it at a more hardcore bar, and the bartender notices it and just takes this club from behind the bar and just slams him in the gut. And he falls against the jukebox, and that's it. But this causes him internal bleeding and basically sets the plot in motion, more or less. So that his mother, Angelica Houston, has to come to him and say this to him, that literally he does not have the stomach for being on the ground.
I didn't even think of that. Wow.
And she kills him.
And I just love the way this all sets up the whole film. And this is a film I have very fond feelings for. I haven't seen it in many, many years. I just watched the first couple of scenes.
Stephen Frears, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Stephen Frears.
Right before he went Hollywood.
Well, yeah. But it's a very good adaptation of a book I don't know anything about.
A comic book? It's a comic book?
It's a graphic book. I think graphic lyrical. It's a graphic lyrical.
That's a good one, because I remember how it's, you know, John Cusack knows he's been busted, and he sees the, you know, the bartender pulls out the club, and he knows, I mean, you see in that moment, he doesn't try to run away, he doesn't try to avoid his fate. I mean, he knows he's about to get bashed with that baseball bat or whatever it is. And I just remember how, he doesn't get sucker punched or anything. It's sort of like, well, I got busted. The guy's now going to hit me with this thing. That's just how it works.
Well, he actually puts one hand up over his face. Mm. He throws a hand up thinking he's going to get hit in the head, and the guy just wham, just hits him right in the gut, and that puts him down. Mm. But there is very much that what you said, Tom. There's this, the bartender just turns his hand over, sees the 20, locks his hand on John Cusack's wrist, and the two of them know, well,
right.
This is what happens. But this is clearly more than he's used to.
Good one. Good. Better than
that $20 bill trick only works when Darren Brown does it.
Don't get that, but I'm sure it's. Is that a sports thing, Kelly Warren?
No, he's that British debunker magician guy who's slightly effete. and he like does. He can make you feel like your feet are stuck to the street.
I don't know like, sports, so.
Oh, and he stays in like a plexiglass cage over the London.
Oh, Doug Henning.
He's the British Doug Henning, and he knew which bullet was in the gun. Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? You guys aren't very zeitgeist. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's great, Kelly. Thanks. Hope you die.
My number two for cat kicking is I'm trying to give you a line. I can't give you a line, but it involves hockey.
Hmm. Hmm.
And it involves a hockey puck to the face.
That one with Mike Myers, the Love Guru.
Just that whole movie was a hockey puck to the face.
Yeah. What's all that about?
But this is I love movies where the protagonist is just like just running on adrenaline the whole time. And some of my runners up, I have a bunch of runners up, but this one it culminates in the guy just getting his ass kicked, held down on the ice in a hockey rink, and it's lit in black light for some reason, while somebody at the far end of the rink is hitting hockey pucks at his face, and a few of them connect, and they're trying to get information from him.
That's a great one. That's a great one, Tom.
At the very end of Running Scared. Paul Walker getting hockey pucks to the face. And just, I don't know hockey. I don't know any sports. But that movie makes it very clear that a hockey puck, like I can imagine having someone like hitting a golf ball at your face. Because I've played golf video games, so I know what that's like. Hockey puck thing, I can't.
That doesn't happen to me, yes.
But having a hockey puck like shot at your face and it connects, like it smacks him in the nose, is just a great beatdown. And he gets out of it not by anything he does. You know, there's no implausible reversal or anything. It's the very end of the movie, and just you know where it goes also works. There's no contrivance. Like he just snaps out of it. You know, he's totally getting his ass kicked and he fails and he gets beat down completely 100%. So that's my number two. Kelly, did you ever get around to seeing Running Scared?
Yeah, Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
That's what I thought. All right.
if we ever do the Quarter Three Movie Club again, and I get to choose, I'm going to choose that. I think
it's worth watching.
Have you ever held a hockey puck in your hand?
I haven't, but I imagine they're probably like there's like a big Oreo, right?
Right. You lick the center of it.
It's got cream in the middle. Like it's a lot just, of Tom's getting in the face with.
It feels heavier than you think it's going to. And so that sense of dread in that scene is fantastic. If you know, it's just the speed, the speed at which hockey takes place. And I'm not a big fan of watching hockey, but I understand having held a hockey puck and just getting a sense for the speed of that. That's a great one.
Well, and they also play really well with like his face pressed against the ice and his breath puffing out, where you know with ice making it cold and the blood pooling on the ice. I mean, it just looks it's so distinct, you know, and it's so distinct to this weird, because it's got this weird black light going. There's this kind of haunted house vibe to it that really fits in with the tone of the movie. All right, so there's my number two. Kelly Wan, what do you got to top that? I hope it's somebody's legs and arms getting blown off again, because that's an ass kick.
All right, here's a line from it. I don't know if you've seen this movie. This is the obscurest one. We gave up 41 to the Chiefs.
Oh, I know this. The Longest Yard with Burt Reynolds.
Horrifying. That's got some good beatdowns in it, actually.
They Any given some... Sunday?
Really? You guys didn't see this movie? I'm kind of sad. You didn't see Big Fan?
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah, good one. Oh, good one.
The beatdown's the MacGuffin, if you will.
Well, what's the...
Damn, Kelly, that's a great one.
Mm-hmm. That's a beatdown.
All right, explain.
I think that applies as a beatdown. Patton Oswalt's like this huge fan of the New York... It's a real team, which I also like, because usually they make fake teams for these football movies. But he's like, isn't it the Giants? It's the New York Giants. He's a Giants fan. It's got kind of a watered-down ending, actually.
Well, it's Giants and Philly. I mean, that's the big...
Yeah. And he sees the main QB. I better break that down for Tom. He sees the quarterback. Of the
I've seen the movie. I did my research to find out what was going on after I saw it.
Yeah, it's pretty confusing. A beatdown.
It's not the quarterback.
Wait, is that from the movie? It's not the quarterback?
It's not the quarterback.
What is it? The running
He's a line runner, Kelly Wand. It's the line runner.
He's the line runner. He's the goalie.
Oh, I could have sworn.
No, it's the team's right. three-point defender.
Anyway, yeah. So the guy beats him up, and then he's still a fan, even though he's got, like, a head injury from it. And he pretends he can't remember the incident so that the guy will be allowed to play again. Although in real life, it's like, in his real life scandals, even when there's an investigation, everyone just kind of, like, pretends that it's not happening. But in the movie, the guy's suspended indefinitely, even though he says he can't remember anything happening. So it's kind of like the public comes off better in that movie than they do in real life, in my opinion. But it's more about one guy's insanity, so that's cool. The end.
And it's by the writer of what movie, Kelly Wand?
Another sports movie. It's obviously White Men Can't Jump.
The Wrestler.
Oh, right, right. And it was a dark sports movie. The Dark Side of Sports screenwriter. I mean, director. I mean, guy.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a very good one. And of course, crucial to the plot. Good call.
And it's Patton Oswalt. He's like a little hobbit. So, like, it's kind of like Michael Cera. It's what would happen to Michael Cera if Scott Pilgrim was based in reality and he was up against an actual black guy. Gotcha. Okay. Racist. Whose turn?
Pingus, what is your number two? Oh, Pingus, go ahead.
I really like this choice, Kelly. Hold on a second. You said he's the quarterback. There's a reason. The guy's
it
name.
Matters.
Well, the guy's name is some form of QB, and I remember getting confused about that.
Quantrell, something Quantrell, I think.
It's a Civil War general.
No, it's Quantrell Bishop. Good. It's Quantrell Bishop, and they call him QB, but he's really not the quarterback. He's like he's a linebacker or a running back or something like that. Now I can't remember, but they keep calling him QB, and I remember getting confused about that. So I don't know why I'm chipping in with this, but I like the.
Is he the shortstop?
He might be. He's either the shortstop or he's a tight end.
Whoa.
Did your son just come in and do the line?
Yeah, that's crossing the line, mister.
All right, Dingus, what is your number two protagonist ass-kicking? And then does it involve anyone's arms or legs being blown off with a shotgun?
Spoiler.
It does not, but it does involve internal injuries.
So that was your number three as well.
Coma.
Is that consistent for you?
It's consistent with these, with the numbers 3 and 2, now that I look at it.
Mine are all nose beatings. Mine are all getting smacked on the nose. I didn't know if yours were all internal injuries or not. So, okay, what is your...
Well, the first two are definitely... Nose equals ass. Thanks. All right, this is a super easy quote. Here you go. I want to see the pin.
I want to see the pin.
The pen or the pin?
Yeah.
The pin.
No idea. Yeah. Oh! I don't know. Clue. The ending number two. Clifford? The Martin Short movie? Not the dog?
It is not Clifford, the big red dog.
Marmaduke?
No, sorry about it.
What's with the... Marmaduke?
It is not Marmaduke. It is not any of these.
Is there a big dog in it?
Digby.
There's not a big dog in it.
Does Benji become big in one? Is that what Dingus is saying? Benji the Hunted, he becomes giant.
I want to see the pin is a terrible quote. That means nothing. What?
Why is Dingus obsessed with giant dogs?
I don't know.
It's a 90th.
I think he's on a Beethoven binge. He's been watching all the Beethoven. He's such a Charles Grodin fan.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the pin, like PIN, like personal identification number.
I want to see the pin. The pin is the name of a character.
I know what it is.
I want to see the pin.
Kelly Wand, you don't know? Because I thought about this one as well.
Inside Man.
Kelly Wand may not have seen it.
Return of the King?
Might be too hip for Kelly Wand.
Oh, Scott Pilgrim.
What is it, Tom?
It is Brick.
Brick.
I remember it now.
Playing the beatdown scene. That's good.
Not good at quotes.
All right. Well, there's this is one of my favorite things, is to look at a protagonist or hero getting beaten for the entire film and watch how the actor carries those injuries with him through the film. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt carries his injuries through this film brilliantly. And the script requires him to, because at some point one of the characters says, "You've swallowed too much blood." But he just gets beat and beat and beat, as will happen to you if you're deciding to be a character in a noir film. And in this particular scene, he needs to get somebody to take him to see the Pin, the biggest drug dealer in town. And so he finds the car of the Pin's muscle, this guy named Tugger. And he's about to smash the car with the cinder block when he sees Tugger coming. And he throws the cinder block down. He goes and sits at the front of Tugger's car. He puts his glasses in his glasses case, and he waits. And he says, "You need to see the Pin." And he gets punched. And then he gets up and says, "You need to see the Pin." And he gets punched again. And he does it again. I want to see the Pin. And he gets punched again. And this is his entree into getting into this guy's lair, is getting beat by the guy's muscle.
That's such an important part of noir, and I love that Brick got that. And that whole detective story thing where the detective has to endure some kind of beating. That's so classic, Dingus.
Lucas Haas is the Pin, right?
Absolutely. And Lucas Haas shows up where else with Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
You've incepted us.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just incepted you guys. Well, it looks like early on that the film might miss this point because he has an altercation with this football dude where he gets the football dude to beat him up. And he just gets beat the crap out of, and then he cold cocks the football dude and walks away. And some girl goes, "Is there a fight?" Yeah. So he wins that, but then it gets it at this moment where he has to get beat down.
That ties into my number one, because it, again, what I look for, I mean, it's this idea of how do you carry your injuries? You know, is this a world where you just get punched up a bunch and then you're fine and you walk away? Or does getting beaten have a long-term effect? And the classic example of an ass-kicking that has a long-term effect is Jack Nicholson having that Band-Aid on his nose. It's not even a Band-Aid. It's just a huge wad of gauze on his nose throughout Chinatown after Roman Polanski slits his nose.
Sorry, dude.
And I had to watch for this because I wasn't sure, because it's not technically an ass-kicking, but it is a nose injury. And, to be fair, he does get punched in the stomach before Roman Polanski gets him with the knife. And I just love... Chinatown is so full of these little vivid vignettes. I mean, it's so alive, even when supposedly nothing is happening. But Roman Polanski, with this huge former sheriff guy in tow, make this incredible team. And it's almost Coen Brothers in its ridiculousness, but it's not. Because it's not going for that tone. And Roman Polanski calling them kitty cat, too, for no discernible reason. You know, what does that even mean? And he's saying, you know what happens to nosy people, kitty cat? And everybody remembers that, too, from Chinatown. I mean, this idea of having a blade against the outer bit of your nostril and then just tearing through it. And it looks so good, too, and as far as, like, just really making you just wince when it happens. They had a knife where the tip of it was hinged and it would spray blood. And it's all one shot. I mean, you see it happen there.
And you hear it.
And I don't know if there's. I don't even know if it needs a sound effect. Is there? I don't know. I mean,
it's a little squishy noise.
There probably is some little Foley thing in there. Yeah. But and again, then the way that it carries through, how ridiculous Jack Nicholson looks, having a huge bandage on his face, because a big part of noir is, you know, you've got this. I remember in a Raymond Chandler novel, someone's. Says to him something like, your face looks like it should be hit by a Buick. I mean, because a noir guy should have a big slab of a face, and it should be, like, prominent and rugged, and just slapping a big old bandage in the middle of it was such a bold thing to do throughout Chinatown. So that's my number one, because what you said, Dingus, about this idea of how do you carry your injury, how humiliating is it, for instance, And that's such a crucial part of noir, is that at some point, and I'm sure there's something about this in, you know, Joseph Campbell or something, at some point he has to endure a beating, especially in noir. So my number one is Chinatown. And so Kelly Wan, so before, like, do you... Because I was curious, is that an ass kicking? And I don't know. I mean, I
apologize from the bottom of my heart.
No, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. But
that's I didn't think it was, and that's the only reason.
Wait a minute, you thought RoboCop was, but Chinatown wasn't?
Yeah, because he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't suffer. I mean, it's humiliating.
Right.
Jake Geetz. Am I saying that right?
Well, that's what I was gonna. How do you say his name?
There's a couple of different. It's Gittes, I think, isn't it?
But when you just said Kitty Cat, which I didn't remember, I just thought of the way his name looks.
Ah, you know what? Like Giddy. Oh, okay. I could buy that.
I thought it was a safe thing. I apologize. I didn't mean to ruin.
No, that's okay.
You didn't. Tom kept his cards close to his chest.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have said that, but I really thought I said only because I didn't think it would be a beatdown just because it's a cosmetic injury. Like, Tom made a great case for it, and I agree with him. But I wouldn't have said anything if I thought Tom was going to go there. I actually thought it was too old a movie for Tom to have seen. I go, Tom, definitely Chinatown.
Chinatown is...
He's read the manga. But...
As I've said before, I mean, Chinatown is one of a handful of perfect movies, along with, like, Jaws, Casablanca, Toy Story 2. I mean, Chinatown is a fantastic director, writer, and actor, all firing on all cylinders and all completely interactive with each other and in tune with what each of the others doing. Chinatown is just freaking perfect. I love that movie.
Isn't that where they shoot Faye Dunaway through urine in Roman Polanski's face? On the set.
Well, it was apparently, because I was looking up trivia about the nose-cutting scene, and it was apparently a pretty tempestuous project.
I think Dunaway was probably a total nightmare, right? Like, that was her prime, like...
And then,
well, I imagine Roman Polanski was in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, but we expect him to be. I don't know. But an actress carrying pee around for the whole shot, I mean, that's weirder than Roman Polanski sketched on a rape. Sorry. We have to admit it's weirder. Never mind. I'll be quiet.
It is weird.
It is weird. In the weird law books. It's a great movie and a great beatdown, and I suck. And we knew that.
But it is a good... I mean, because that's the thing. It was all three of mine. Oh, Brother, We're Out There, Running Scared, and Chinatown are all nosal injuries. Yeah, exactly. Of varying degrees. So to me,
tells us a lot about your idea.
You know, I've been punched in the face once. I've never been in a fight, but I once got punched in the face, and it's pretty humiliating. All you got to do, if you smack somebody in the nose, they're demoralized. They want no part of fighting anymore, I've found. So
that's when I started winning fights, is when I found that out. And you're basically just hoping they don't call your bluff, and then generally didn't. They're like, wow.
You've actually punched someone in the nose, Kelly Wand?
Back in eighth grade.
Oh, well, yeah, that doesn't count.
And then he got in trouble. It was awesome.
That's nice.
He got suspended. I got nothing.
Is that your number one protagonist beatdown, by the way?
My real life? No. Wait, is it my turn?
Yeah, so what do you got? I can't wait to see what you have that tops RoboCop.
I did top it. And here's the spoiler. Dingus will hate me.
Is it a Star Wars movie? Is it Luke getting his hand cut off? Because that's close to your RoboCop thing.
That's a good beatdown, actually.
It's a dismemberment. There's a difference between a down and a dismemberment.
Well, also, he becomes a Jedi from getting his hand cut off, so technically it's not a beatdown. He goes from suicidal, cripple, to strength. Within two, if you're watching them all back-to-back. So, okay.
It's really just a hand job.
Whoa.
Oh, Diggs, I'm very offended by you tonight. You're a sick man.
We've no idea.
What is your number one?
All right, I'm going to give a quote that gives the movie away because I just don't care about being cryptic like some people are. Son, behold your mother. Ooh, tough room. Really?
Aw, Chinatown.
Passion of the Gibson. My favorite movie ever. Remember when Mel Gibson was...
Oh, it is the Passion.
Wow.
Good.
That's a beatdown. Now that is an iconic beatdown.
With that, and you topped RoboCop. Nice.
I did.
Done.
A beatdown that started a religion. Or
that's more
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hey.
Oh.
Did Jesus kick him out of here?
Okay, I'm back.
I'm here.
Yeah, I don't know what just happened there. We had silence.
So go ahead, Kelly. Tell us why that's the beat. And why he's the protagonist.
The whole movie is the Passion of the Christ, which apparently is just Catholic speak for beatdown. The whole movie is just about his beatdown. Although it's not a beatdown because he comes back.
And no, it is.
It's a beatdown, right? Yeah. Isn't it iconic? Would you call it an iconic beatdown?
No.
Or you didn't see the movie, did you? Or did you?
Yes,
I can't remember now.
I've used this podcast, and you objected.
I can't remember. I don't listen to the podcast.
I have not seen the movie, so I'm the one who can't comment.
Tom, you said you're going to see it.
And I will. So we could... I've been busy watching Chinatown.
I used it for, I think, one of your, it was one of your categories, Kelly. I think it was something about being despicable or something.
Huh.
And you took issue with me because you love this movie and you think it's the best movie about Christ being beaten down ever.
Kelly Wan also loves Mel Gibson. Kelly Wan is a huge Mel Gibson fan.
Only since the tapes. But he gets beat down a lot in his movies. Braveheart, he got beaten down. It's a Catholic.
I don't think this will trump dinguses, but one of the ones I considered, but I don't think it's a beat down, is Road Warrior. And he gets so beat up in that. I mean, it's mainly a car wreck. It's
And Thunderdome and Mad Max.
Yeah.
He gets run over a lot.
Gibson is good at that. Before we trump Dingus, was that your number one? Did I just trump?
Well, you know it isn't, since I haven't seen Road Warrior, and I'm holding out for the Blu-ray when I get invited to your house to watch it.
Right.
Dingus didn't see Road Warrior.
I know. Can you believe that? Good Lord.
Wow. That's interesting to me.
All right.
Well, it's like Passion of the Christ, but
with cars.
Australian. Yeah. It's Cars, the Pixar movie, meets.
Except nobody blames the Jews for what happened in Australia.
And his wife.
All right, Dingus, what is your number one protagonist ass-kicking? So this was your category. I'm guessing this inspired the category. The best is...
This absolutely did inspire the category. And when I talk about protagonists or actors who can carry their injuries through a film, this is one of my favorite... This is one of my favorite... From the moment I saw this, and I saw it with a good friend of mine, it relates to... And I can talk about... other films, since you guys have done all three of yours. One of the things I liked about Raiders of the Lost Ark was how Indiana Jones gets beat up so much, and Harrison Ford carries those injuries through the film. Mm-hmm. And this pays off in a couple of ways. But my choice is not Indiana Jones, because he doesn't really get beat down in a fight where he doesn't win that fight. Even in the fight with the German on the flying wing, he gets beat up, but he doesn't get beat down. And this character gets beat down, and he carries his injuries through the film, and I really like this. And here's the quote for this particular film, and this did inform the entire category. Here you go. It's the kiss off. If I never see him again, it'll be soon enough.
Hmm.
What? I thought you were going to do Blade Runner.
I thought he was doing Raiders. Well, what the hell is he
doing? When does Harrison Ford get beat up and say something about it? To get Mosquito Coast.
This isn't Harrison Ford. This is somebody else. It's a completely different film.
Oh. It has nothing to do with Raiders.
It has nothing to do with anything that Harrison Ford has ever done.
Did you tell us
That's
all that
him.
Stuff?
Yeah, what was the point of the Raiders thing?
I apologize. What I was saying was what I really liked about Raiders was how Harrison Ford carries his injuries through the film. Hmm. And in this other film... which I link to this, is this character getting beaten down and this guy being able to sort of carry that through the film, and I really like that.
But he doesn't win the fight.
For bringing that up.
No. That's why.
And he's not played by Harrison Ford.
He's not. It has nothing to do with that. I apologize for bringing that up.
We're easily confused, Dingus.
Yes, I know.
We're third graders.
Phantom Menace?
Wait, what's the line again? Because that sounded familiar. Do that again, Dingus.
The kiss-off, something.
It's the kiss-off. If I never see him again, it'll be soon enough.
Is this going to be another Midnight Run? Because I don't recall
Sin City?
Anybody...
No.
Miller's Crossing.
Ah, that does sound like a Miller's Crossing line.
Sounds Coen-y. Huh.
That's Miller's Crossing. Very good, Kelly Wand.
Yeah. See?
So this is why I chose this category. Because seeing Gabriel Byrne's Tom Reagan get beat up. And just he just gets beat. This is one of those times when I was watching films. The first time I saw this, this is a 1990 film, where I just thought, God, this guy is just getting his ass kicked over and over and over again. And that's not necessarily the case, but he gets beat. And in this particular beat up, this is very much like the Brick one, where he is setting it up for a specific reason. And this is a convention. He's trying to protect his boss, and in trying to protect his boss, Leo, played by Albert Finney, he's getting his boss to beat him up in front of all of his boss's henchmen. And he orchestrates this, and he gets his ass kicked, and then he moves on. I mean, there's a couple other times where he gets punched and hit and kicked, but this particular beatdown where he's in the club and he's just confessed to Leo that he and Verna were together on a specific night, and Verna being Leo's main squeeze. And so he leaves Leo's office, Leo being the gangster crime boss in this town. And the halls are lined with Leo's henchmen, who are all there to protect him. And Leo comes walking down, and Tom turns around and just gets clocked and clocked. And he falls down the stairs, and he gets clocked again. And then he stumbles into a woman, and she beats him with her purse. And he just gets beat up.
No, that's it.
This is the perfect, as far as I'm concerned, the perfect beatdown. And Gabriel Byrne is constantly getting beaten up, as far as I remember from this movie. And I watched it again the other night, and I still remember it is him constantly getting beat up. So He's my favorite beatdown of any protagonist.
Did you ever read Ethan Coen's short story collection, Gates of Eden?
Yeah, I love that.
Remember the first story is like the boxing match, and the guy just keeps getting punched in the face, and it's his point of view. getting punched again.
That's great. That's a great Kelly Wand.
Yeah. That's how I remember Fiction with sound effects. Remember that Ethan Coen prose? Oh, he's so far out of
the dingus. I'm confused, though, because Harrison Ford isn't in Miller's Crossing.
He is. He plays Chet.
All right, runners up. What did you guys have for runners up?
I had Kick-Ass, where he gets knifed his first day, another first day.
Not a beatdown. You're
getting stabbed is not a beatdown, but getting stabbed in the nose is a beatdown.
Not stabbed in the nose. He got punched in the stomach before he got his nose slit, so you know.
Oh, so the motion of the knife determines the beatdown eligibility.
Exactly, yes.
Yes, Top Chick. Thank you for that. Sudden Impact, where Dirty Harry just gets kicked in the face a bunch of times and shoved over the pier, which I'm sure you guys didn't see because you're...
Is that one of those westerns?
Yeah, that western, Dirty Harry 4. The one where he said, never mind. Lupus and the Bad News Bears, and movie I'm sure neither of you have seen.
Lupus and the Bad News Bears? What?
Yeah.
Never Lupus.
It's a little... Yeah, Lupus.
Lupus.
Remember Lupus?
That's somebody's name in Bad News Bears?
Yeah, they put mustard on his head and put him in the trash can, and then Tanner Boyle stands up for him.
There's someone named Tanner Boyle in the Bad News Bears?
Yeah, he's the racist, lovable racist kid.
That's a great name. They should have that in
the original, not the Billy Bob Thornton gelded, watered-down, crappy version. And also The Hustler, where Paul Newman gets his thumbs broken.
Oh, yeah,
spoiler.
Yeah.
That's what injuries to the end of the movie and a humiliation. And, like, it's like Jake Geeks gets his nose cut because he's sticking his nose in. And Paul Newman gets his thumbs cut because he's sticking his thumbs into the onto that. Okay, yeah, I get it, Kelly. Thank you. Thanks, James Cameron.
The Unforgiven has a great beatdown that's pivotal.
Yes.
Of course. You know,
Morgan
Freeman. Gene Hackman. Well, I'm thinking more of Gene Hackman. When people come into town with guns, Gene Hackman kicks their ass. And it doesn't that happen? That happened to Clint Eastwood.
What about Gene Hackman and the dude, the bounty hunter guy in Quick and the Dead, too? He beats down that guy with his guns. Does that count, Tom?
I don't know that it's shooting.
I knew you wouldn't count it. Just a knife. Everything's got to be knife, nose. Let's hear Dingus's runners up now that you're done.
There's one I know Dingus is thinking of. It's not the beatdown so much as the edit. Dingus, do you know what I'm thinking of?
No, go ahead.
It's someone talking real cocky about how he's going to kick his ass, and then we cut to that person getting punched in the face repeatedly.
Is it Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Very good, yes.
Yeah. That's a
and again, it's not so much the beat down as the edit. It's the cut right there.
The Godfather has that great beat down, but it's not the hero, so it doesn't count because Santino's the hero, and he's the one doing the trash can lid. Huh, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I shouldn't be talking about it at all, should I?
Fight Club.
I like
Fight Club.
Bang Bang, but I considered Fight Club.
Yeah.
Fight Club's good.
It's a little problematic in that I guess you're beating
himself. Himself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But certainly.
But in the nose, so it makes Tom's.
Well, the scene where Tyler Durden is getting punched by the big old fat mafioso guy after they've been caught using the basement, and he's spraying blood on him, saying, "You don't know where I've been." That's just that's a classic someone enduring a beating for a reason scene.
What's your favorite line from that scene, Tom?
Oh, why don't you join us? You and your big friend.
You should join our club.
You should join
I was thinking of you and your friend. Yeah, I was thinking of the same
way. I think you have to specify you and your big friend. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. What was that, Dingus?
Well, I was thinking of the scene where he beats himself down.
Well, right.
In the boss's office where he says about sexual harassment, and then he beats himself down.
That's full.
Because this
could beat down.
As soon as I said this category, my wife asked me what's your 3x3 this week, and I told her, she goes, oh, Fight Club.
And she's a girl.
Have you ever seen that? Why would you guess that? That's brilliant.
One that I thought about, and it's more of a consistent tone, it's a consistent arc throughout the movie rather than any particular one instance. I remember being so impressed with how Bruce Campbell is continually just beaten and pummeled and flung into things throughout Evil Dead 2.
Uh-huh.
That is just one. That movie is one long horror movie about a guy getting beaten by demons,
mm-hmm. including his own body parts.
Well, is the hand fighting thing? Is that in Evil Dead 3 or is that in 2? That is in 2.
It's 2.
But in 3, he's throwing plates at himself. Or 3 is more slapstick, is what I recall.
2, he breaks plates over his head and flips himself over with his evil hand. Which is something you don't see too many actors. That's a beatdown. That should have been on all of our lists. Evil Dead 2's an hour and a half of beatdown.
There's a fantastic, although at the beginning of Sin Nombre, I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's
Wait a minute. I told you to see that. Stop it.
Well, Kelly Wand counts as you guys.
Oh, good point.
There's a beating at the opening of Sin Nombre, which is a gang initiation. But the person getting beaten isn't really the protagonist, and in fact ends up kind of being quite the opposite. But it's a great character arc for this character that begins with his beating as a gang induction.
Yeah, that's pretty good, actually.
I think the grimmest beatdown I've ever seen, I'm pretty sure both of you know. You know where I'm going with this?
Faces of Death.
No. I'm talking about an actual movie.
I Spit on Your Grave. Wait,
I think you're talking about Irreversible.
Yeah, that's one that I'm just not even sure I'm ready to.
That doesn't count.
Why doesn't that count? Because that's what. Now what?
Because rapes.
No. Sorry. Kelly Wand. Good Lord, the opening scene with the fire extinguisher, where he kills the wrong person, not the rapist.
Oh, I just fast forwarded to the rape.
I mean, just that movie is just so the fact that you see this really graphic beating, and it's. It's CG, and it's just really a worst/best case example of CG, where you see someone basically getting his face caved in by a fire extinguisher with no context, and then the movie goes on to give you context, and you later realize what a terrible mistake this whole thing was. I mean, that's just such a grim experience. I love that movie. It's not a pleasant movie to watch, but just as a form of storytelling, is a bit of emotional manipulation. Just that right there, that the beatdown in that is just really, really grim and hard to even think about, much less watch. So,
man, it's brutal to hear you bring that up because I immediately get the image of that fire extinguisher going down.
Yeah.
Would you rather get your face kicked in by a fire extinguisher or burned by a fire?
Pass.
Also, payback. Yeah. Speaking of
payback, oh, yeah.
Payback.
Think about that. Yep.
Now, are you talking about where Deborah, where he hits Deborah Carr Unger with a coffee pot?
They cut that out of
it. I know, they did, didn't they?
Also, What Women Want when he gets electrocuted and learns what women want.
You have seen What Women Want?
No, I just read how he does.
Don't lie, you've seen it.
No, I don't see Helen Hunt movies. You heard me.
Superman?
I've learned my lesson.
You didn't see Supergirl?
That's Helen Slater, fool.
Oh, my God, wow. Okay, I'm not sure I knew that.
all of a sudden, I don't know why you're bringing up Irreversible makes me think of this, but I just read something this week about Tell No One being remade.
What? Wait, what's being remade?
By
Tell No One?
Yeah, because it's already sort of it's an adaptation that's, is it going back to the South? What do you know, Dingus?
Well, do you know who's directing it?
No. I don't know anything about this. Spill the beans.
All right. I just read it this week, and I don't know why. Was Irreversible a French film? Is Gaspar Noé French?
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing Tell No One?
No. It's Andrew Dominik.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I don't know what to make of that, but it's this weird sort of back and forth.
Why don't you explain what Tell No One is?
Why don't you?
Well, it's sort of this film noir. Would you call it film noir, Southern Gothic? I'm not sure what you'd call it. It's French. There's a French movie. How would you characterize it? Kelly Wand, have you seen a French movie called Tell No One?
No.
You would like it.
I don't see movies with that end in No One.
Well, it's this great thriller, and I have no idea about the source material other than what Tom has told me. But it was, what did you say? It was in New Orleans?
Yeah. I don't know if it's New Orleans. It's definitely in the South. It's like some deep South thriller. The book is, yeah.
Right. But it was adapted by a French filmmaker into this really good French thriller. And so now this guy, Andrew Dominik, who's a really good filmmaker, is apparently on board to do the remake. So while I would be in the Kelly Wand camp of let's not remake European films into American films or any foreign films into American films, this kind of has the feeling of sort of a weird sort of flip-floppy, maybe it'll work. Kind of.
Well, because France stole it from the Deep South and then set it in France, that's exciting news. Is there a beatdown in Tell No One?
I think there is, actually.
Tell No One
if
has,
you think of that,
go ahead, Dings.
Crazy female assassin.
I was going to say, it has one of the coolest female henchmen I've ever seen in a movie. She was fantastic. The scenes with her, yeah. You know what? Yeah. That's a good
point. They should remake Wicked, but from Dorothy's point of view.
Whoa, hold on. Say that again, Kelly Wand.
They should remake The Wiz, but white.
1, 2, 3, not only you and...
That was good.
Boy, how many layers are we down? Let's kick the hospital.
Dude, that movie won this weekend. Or, no, it didn't. Yeah, it did.
No,
The Expandables. Wait, didn't The
Expandables won, and then Inception beat Scott Pilgrim. What do you think about that? People would rather be confused, again, by Inception than see
than four, Scott Pilgrim. By Scott Pilgrim. Yeah. All right, let's do for next week's 3x3. I'm trying to think what inspired this. Not sure I have anything relevant. You know what? My new beard inspired this. After we saw
Tom's all John Hoxie now.
Yeah, we saw Winter Stone. I wanted to know
what your new beard's name is. What's your name?
That's funny, Dingus. That's really good. I can't really grow a beard, but I get this scraggly facial hair.
No, that's good.
Well, it's my Ozark background. I have Ozark. You know, that's where my people are from. And when
it tastes like marzipan.
When we saw Winter's Bone, they all have that scraggly facial hair. So I thought, well, dadgummit, if they can look that way, I'm just gonna grow this out and see what happens. And I look like I'm from the Ozarks now. So I'm not sure exactly how this ties in remotely. Beards don't really count. Facial hair doesn't really count. But what I want are your three best outfits in movies. It's sort of like you see somebody dress a certain way in a movie. I've never done this, but...
So nothing to do with beards.
But it's like you see an outfit that inspires you in a movie. For you guys, it might just be a funny outfit. It might be something that's silly. It might... you know what? I don't know. Do what you want with it. I just want to know about the three best outfits. It could be the fact that Batman has nipples and the Joel Schumacher Batman. You know, whatever makes you tick, I want your three best outfits.
So you're talking about clothes, not the CIA.
You're not talking about the outfit and payback.
Right. Not the CIA. And I'm not going to take anything off the table. There's a bunch of things that you could throw out there. I just want your three best outfits. So on a few occasions in this podcast, we've talked about what somebody is wearing in a movie. So go where you will with this. Just
I'm so excited with where this could go. It's great. Good.
Does a slitted nose count as an outfit?
A few. If you can make it work.
Because I know you have a lot of rules about noses.
Having being dismembered by a shotgun is not an outfit. I just want you to know that's not a stylistic choice. So good. So there we go. We will do that next week. We will also be seeing Piranha 3D, which I'm super psyched about. I know nothing about it except
Kelly Brook.
I couldn't care less. I haven't seen her in anything since that weird science movie, so I'm not. I'm just psyched that this is a horror movie by Alexander Aja, who's done great stuff and some horrible stuff, and I'm curious to see which side of that divide this falls on. So join us next week. I am Tom Chick. I am joined by Christian Mertansky.
Man, you're getting really good.
Close.
It's Christian Murawski, but you're close.
Isn't that what I said? All right.
You said that. I would also like to be called Christian Spatula, but Christian Murawski's fine.
And also with us we have Kelly Wand.
Bread makes you gay. I mean, blind. This audio program was brought to you by Sound.